Today is Saturday, April 11th, and this is the World Socialist Website.
Oppose the draft. Build a working-class movement against imperialist war. Late last month, the Trump administration announced that beginning in December 2020, every American male between the ages of 18 and 26 will be automatically registered for the military draft. The Socialist Equality Party and the International Youth and Students for Social Equality warn workers and young people throughout the United States, the American ruling class is laying the foundations for the reimposition of the draft. The corporate oligarchy wants cannon fodder for its illegal and expanding wars of aggression. The automatic registration of millions of young people into the Selective Service System, buried in the 2026 National Defense Authorization Act, NDAA, is a major step toward conscription. Currently, 46 states automatically register men through their driver's license systems, covering roughly 81% of those eligible. The new law federalizes and universalizes this process, using Social Security Administration records to enroll the rest. Registration will no longer be dependent on a driver's license or any individual action. It will be fully automatic, compulsory, and tied to federal databases that track every citizen from birth. This is being implemented as the United States wages war against Iran, prepares for a ground invasion of the Iranian coastline, and escalates its confrontation with both Russia and China. Within the framework of a so-called ceasefire, the Trump administration is continuing to send a massive armada of military forces to the Middle East. The active duty U.S. military has roughly 1.3 million personnel, with forces committed globally. At its peak, the Iraq War in 2003 involved 170,000 troops, but it strained the entire military through repeated deployments. A sustained ground campaign in Iran, a country four times larger with three times the population, would likely require 300,000 to 500,000 troops by most estimates, and potentially far more for a prolonged occupation. The all-volunteer force simply doesn't have that capacity without either a massive expansion of recruitment, which is already falling short of targets, or conscription. The infrastructure is being quietly modernized at a moment when the gap between military commitments and available manpower is huge. This is being actively discussed behind the backs of the American people. On March 8th, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt refused to rule out a draft, telling Fox News it is not part of the current plan right now, but the president again wisely keeps his options on the table. The war against Iran is itself part of an escalating global war, including the U.S.-NATO war against Russia and Ukraine, and in particular, the preparation for war against China. The project of global conquest requires a return to conditions in which tens of thousands of American youth are sent to die to maintain the domination of American capitalism. Between 1964 and 1973, the U.S. government drafted 2.2 million men to fight in Vietnam. Conscription fueled a mass anti-war movement and provoked resistance inside the armed forces that contributed to the military's disintegration. Nixon abolished the draft in 1973 because the ruling class could no longer sustain it politically. For more than 50 years, the United States has relied on an all-volunteer force. The ruling class feared the political consequences of conscription. That system is now breaking down. Recruitment shortfalls have deepened. An NPR report published April 10 notes a surge in calls to military counseling organizations from service members seeking conscientious objector status or early separation. With the Iran war described as a major trigger, soldiers cited the bombing of a girl's school and the broader climate of illegality surrounding the armed forces. While Trump signed the measure into law, the drive to reimpose conscription is bipartisan. Democratic Representative Chrissy Houlihan sponsored automatic registration in 2024 and reintroduced it in 2025 after it was stripped from the previous year's NDAA. The final bill passed the House 312-112 and the Senate 77-20. Democrats sponsored it, shepherded it through committee, and voted for it on the floor. This is part of an international process. 80 years after the crimes of the Third Reich, Germany's Bundestag approved a new military service law on December 5th, 2025, requiring all 18-year-old men to complete a mandatory questionnaire. Young men will need permission from the German army to leave the country. Defense Minister Boris Pistorius declared, "If that is not enough, we will have no choice but to introduce partial conscription." France announced a voluntary military service scheme in November 2025. General Fabien Mandon, the chief of the defense staff, said the country must be prepared to lose its children in a war with Russia. The preparations for war are inextricably connected to the assault on social programs. The same youth to be conscripted are already being denied a future. They face impossible rents, student debt, precarious work, and the destruction of social services, including public education. Trump declared earlier this month that social programs must be sacrificed because we're fighting wars. He said, "We can't take care of daycare, Medicaid, Medicare. We have to take care of one thing, military protection." Trump's fiscal year 2027 budget request devotes $1.5 trillion to the military, the largest Pentagon request in history, while driving non-defense spending to its lowest share of GDP since the 1950s. The return of the draft is also inextricably connected to the assault on democratic rights. The same government building the infrastructure for conscription is expanding the powers of ICE, criminalizing dissent, and concentrating power in the executive. The program of total war cannot be implemented, and the extreme levels of social inequality defended without a ferocious military police dictatorship within the United States. The SEP and the IYSSE advance the following demands: the immediate repeal of the automatic selective service registration provisions and the rejection of any activation of conscription for the war against Iran or any other imperialist conflict; the immediate withdrawal of U.S. forces from the Middle East and an end to the war against Iran; an end to the bipartisan drive for global domination; the arming of Israel; the escalation against Russia and China; and the use of military violence to offset the crisis of American capitalism; the abolition of the standing army and the dismantling of the vast military intelligence apparatus built up to wage endless war abroad and repression at home; the Pentagon, the intelligence agencies, the global network of bases, the system of private military contractors, and the machinery of surveillance and covert operations are instruments not of defense, but of imperialist domination. An end to the economic draft, under which young people are driven into military service by poverty, debt, lack of decent jobs, and the impossibility of affording an education. Every young person must have the social right to a decent job, free high-quality education, healthcare, and housing. Put an end to coercion into military service. The redirection of the vast resources squandered on war to meet urgent social needs. Universal health care, free public education, affordable housing, and secure, well-paid jobs for all. The fight for this program must be developed as an independent movement of the working class, in irreconcilable opposition to both capitalist parties and all their political accomplices. The old and principled slogan of the socialist movement must be revived: not a man nor a penny for imperialist war, not one worker, not one student, not one young person sacrificed for the predatory aims of the American ruling class. This is not a pacifist appeal, it is a class policy. The fight against conscription is not a matter of seeking individual exemption from military service or avoiding personal involvement in war while leaving untouched the war aims of the ruling class. It means active and uncompromising opposition to imperialist militarism itself. It means the defense of the democratic and social rights of the working class. Opposition to the draft must therefore be linked to opposition to war, to the entire military intelligence apparatus, and to the capitalist system that produces war. This movement must be international. Workers in the United States have no interest in killing workers in Iran, China, Russia, or anywhere else. The enemy is not abroad. It is at home, the capitalist ruling class, which subordinates the world to profit, plunder, and war. The fight against the restoration of the draft is inseparable from the fight against capitalism. War is rooted in the contradictions of the capitalist system itself. The alternative is socialism, the reorganization of economic life on the basis of social need, under the democratic control of the working class, on an international scale.
Starmer visits Gulf States amid fracturing special relationship with U.S. by Robert Stevens. The U.S.-Israeli war on Iran has provoked an escalating crisis for all the European powers, none more so than the Starmer government in Britain. Foreign policy precepts that have determined the actions of UK governments for decades are being torn apart, centered on the worsening breakdown of the special relationship with the United States. Starmer, in opposition, promised a quote-unquote reset with the major European powers after Britain's fracturous and economically catastrophic exit from the European Union, as demanded not just by dominant sections of British capital, but also by the Biden administration, which wanted a restoration of the UK's role as a reliable voice for Washington within the bloc. But by the time Labour came to office, Donald Trump occupied the White House, forcing Starmer to try to agree to a vital pro-Brexit trade deal with the US government that was openly hostile to the EU. A trade deal was eventually reached, but entirely on Trump's terms, with Britain hit a little less hard by tariffs than other European powers. The second major bone of contention was military spending, with Starmer posturing ever more unsuccessfully as the European power most receptive to Trump's demands for 5% of GDP spending by NATO powers. The Iran war has brought US-UK and US-European tensions to a fever pitch, with Trump repeatedly berating Starmer and other European leaders for placing face-saving restrictions on US flights and for not sending ships to the Strait of Hormuz. Starmer was, quote, no Winston Churchill, end quote, Trump declared, and the Royal Navy's warships were, quote unquote, toys, fronted by, quote, two old broken-down aircraft carriers, end quote. Within hours of Trump's announcing a ceasefire in the U.S. war against Iran, Starmer announced a visit to the Middle East, quote, to meet leaders of countries who have been in the front line and will set out his full support for the newly agreed ceasefire, end quote. Talks would center, quote, on ensuring the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz remains permanent, with the United Kingdom continuing to lead international efforts, end quote. Once again, however, Starmer's diplomatic visit unraveled spectacularly. Little of substance emerged from talks with Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain. Moreover, despite the ceasefire, back home, Starmer's inability to send more than a single destroyer to the region, HMS Dragon, to the UK base in Cyprus, has infuriated the most hawkish sections of the ruling class, who are generally concerned that everything possible be done to fix Britain's relations with the US. Labour's plan to increase military spending beyond 3% of GDP only sometime during the next parliament has been denounced for leaving Britain, quote-unquote, defenseless in a time of what should be a unified war between the West and its enemies, Russia, China, and Iran. The chorus became deafening Thursday, with a Telegraph front page exclusive entitled Putin mocks Starmer in Channel, reporting, quote, Vladimir Putin has openly defied Sir Keir Starmer's threat to seize sanctioned Russian vessels by sending a warship to escort them through the Channel, end quote. The Telegraph observed, quote, Putin's flotilla cruising past the south coast while RFA Tide Force, a Royal Fleet auxiliary tanker, trailed in their wake, end quote. Two 600-foot tankers, Universal and Enigma, were protected on their journey, quote, past the south coast, end quote, by a 6,620-ton warship, the Admiral Grigorovich. Starmer had given, quote, special forces the authority to capture the armada of rusted ships illegally ferrying oil to support Russia's war in Ukraine, saying he would hit the Shadow Fleet even harder if they sailed through British waters, end quote, the newspaper complained. Quote, however, Britain is yet to seize a single Russian vessel. Dozens of Russian vessels are believed to have passed through the channel since Sir Keir's threat, end quote. In the same vein, the Financial Times wrote, quote, the Iran war has brutally exposed Britain's lack of military readiness and shortage of defense assets, with its navy unable to immediately deploy an advanced warship even after a UK airbase on Cyprus was targeted by drones, end quote. The Times added, quote, defense readiness, the essential provision to put infrastructure and industry on a war footing, has barely begun, end quote. Starmer's Middle East trip became a feeding frenzy for his critics, who complained that he was seeking to project an image of British influence and strength that bore no relationship to the military reality. Among the facts pointed out were that there is not a single Royal Navy combat vessel within reach of the Gulf States being visited, with HMS Dragon taken to port for essential maintenance. The I paper headlined a report, Royal Navy in Doom Loop, with too few ships working too hard. Labor has fared no better with the more pro-European voices within ruling circles, who have been silent for weeks, made the belated complaint that Starmer's attempt to placate Trump has damaged the essential and clearly opposed interests of British imperialism. None of these complaints were directed against Trump's threat to obliterate Iran and its civilization, but rather his temporary retreat from his threat for highlighting underlying U.S. weakness with its knock-on effect for the U.K. and Europe. Patrick Winter, diplomatic editor for The Guardian, wrote, quote, Trump needlessly started a war at the urging of Israel, refused to listen to those experts urging caution, devised a strategy built on a misapprehension of Iran, sparked a ruinous regional conflict, caused the death of thousands of civilians, unhinged the world economy, strengthened, for now, the repressive instincts of the Iranian and Russian governments, left America more discredited and isolated, end quote. His colleague, Peter Beaumont, complained that following the ceasefire, quote, across the globe, friends and foes will draw their own conclusions. China and Russia will have noted the limits of U.S. power and that, despite the jaw-jaw, the U.S. did not commit ground troops to its chaotically conducted campaign. The damage wrought by Trump to a weakened NATO will also have been well noted, even as European countries have moved to distance themselves from Washington, end quote. To counter criticisms of UK military preparedness, Defense Secretary John Healey called a press conference Thursday where he stated that UK armed forces had been monitoring three Russian submarines he accused of mounting a covert operation above cables and pipelines in the North Atlantic, lasting longer than a month. He was forced to acknowledge that there was, quote, no evidence, end quote, of any damage to UK infrastructure in the Atlantic. Prior to concluding his Middle East trip on Friday, Starmer gave vent to his own frustration when he interviewed in Bahrain by ITV journalist Robert Peston, complaining of being, quote, fed up with the facts that families across the country see their bills go up and down on energy, businesses' bills go up and down on energy because of the actions of Putin or Trump across the world, end quote. His regret over this momentary outburst was clear. With the fate of British imperialism tied to the U.S. war machine by a million threads, including its nuclear capability, Starmer told Preston that his desire to reopen the Strait of Hormuz had necessitated a call with Trump on, quote, the practical plan that's going to be needed to get navigation through the strait, end quote. When asked about Trump's threat to pull the U.S. out of NATO, Starmer made an appeal for a continued alliance, quote, it is in America's interests, it's in European interests, end quote, that, quote, the single most effective military alliance the world has ever known, end quote, is preserved, he said, adding that he had been making the case for Europeans to do more, as Trump has demanded, quote, for the best part of 2 years, end quote. The Starmer government's dilemma is that of British imperialism as a whole. Whether to continue efforts to restore the relations with U.S. imperialism, on which it has relied for decades, placating Trump to keep NATO alive, or whether to shift more decisively toward the creation of an at least semi-independent economic and military bloc with Germany, France, and others to counter the America First anti-European agenda now dominating Washington. Both demand massive escalation in military spending, austerity cuts of unprecedented savagery, and an ever deeper turn to authoritarian rule. Amid the continued drive by all the imperialist powers to redivide the world between them, both routes lead to bloody wars internationally and class war at home. The only progressive alternative is through the systematic political and industrial mobilization of the working class against all factions of the imperialist ruling class, in Britain and internationally, in a socialist anti-war movement. Trump says the U.S. is loading up the ships with weapons during ceasefire talks. On Friday, during a phone interview with the New York Post, President Trump said U.S. warships were being reloaded with weapons to be used against Iran in anticipation of a failure of the ceasefire talks taking place in Pakistan. When asked if he thought the negotiations would be successful, he said, quote, we're going to find out in about 24 hours. We're going to know soon, end quote. Trump's remarks are an unmistakable indication that the two-week pause in the U.S. air assault on Iran he announced on Tuesday has resolved nothing and is being used to prepare the next stage of the war. Trump made clear that the Pentagon is replenishing its weaponry during the pause in the air assault. He said, quote, we have a reset going. We're loading up the ships with the best ammunition, the best weapons ever made, even better than what we did previously, and we blew them all apart, end quote. Emphasizing that a return to warfare was on the agenda, Trump repeated himself, quote, but we're loading up the ships. We're loading up the ships with the best weapons ever made, even at a higher level than we used to do a complete decimation. And if we don't have a deal, we will be using them, and we will be using them very effectively, end quote. Reports from multiple outlets since Tuesday show that Iran retains control over the passage through the Strait of Hormuz, with shipping still restricted and, in some accounts, subject to Iranian oversight or tolling arrangements. Disturbed by Iran's control of the strait and the fact that this is being reported widely by the corporate media, Trump posted on Truth Social at 12:30 p.m. on Friday, quote, the Iranians are better at handling the fake news media and public relations, in quotes, than they are at fighting, end quote. A report by CBS News said data compiled by Marine Traffic shows that only 22 ships have passed through the strait since Tuesday. Estimates of shipping traffic in the Persian Gulf indicate a significant bottleneck of over 600 total commercial vessels at a standstill, approximately 400 of which are oil tankers and not moving through the strait. A few minutes later, Trump escalated his threats against Iran, writing, quote, "The Iranians don't seem to realize they have no cards other than a short-term extortion of the world by using international waterways. The only reason they are alive today is to negotiate," end quote. There are major conflicts within the U.S. ruling establishment over whether the talks will produce any results because of Israel's continued attacks on Lebanon. Iranian officials have warned that time is running out, while U.S. officials are trying to preserve the ceasefire before it expires on April 22nd. However, based on Trump's comments to the New York Post, it is likely the Israeli attacks on Lebanon are being used to deliberately sabotage talks that function as a cover for preparations to restart the war on a far higher level. The truce discussions are taking place in Islamabad, with Pakistan mediating and a large U.S. delegation involved, including Vice President J.D. Vance, Steve Witkoff, Jared Kushner, Marco Rubio, and Admiral Brad Cooper, alongside officials from the National Security Council, State Department, and Pentagon. On the Iranian side, reports say the delegation arrived in Islamabad and is headed by Parliament Speaker Mohammed Bagher Ghalibaf, with Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi and other senior officials also included. Reuters described the meeting as, quote, make or break, end quote, and other reports say the two sides remain far apart on core issues. The official line is that the talks are meant to translate the ceasefire into a longer-standing arrangement, but there is no agreement over whether Lebanon is covered. Pakistan and Iran have said that the ceasefire framework includes Lebanon, while the White House and Israel have denied it. Iran's position is tied to Israel's continued expansion of the war in Lebanon. Iranian state-linked comments reported in the press have framed the Lebanese front as inseparable from Iran's own security, with Revolutionary Guard Commander General Sayed Majid Mousavi warning that, quote, aggression toward Lebanon is aggression toward Iran, end quote, and promising a, quote, heavy response, end quote. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who previously said there is, quote, no ceasefire in Lebanon, end quote, agreed on Thursday to start direct negotiations with Lebanon after Trump urged restraint by Israel and the European imperialist leaders warned that the attacks on Lebanon threatened to collapse the ceasefire with Iran. Recent reporting says that more than 1.2 million people have been displaced since the beginning of the conflict, with the UN citing evacuation orders covering 14% of the country. On Wednesday, Israeli strikes killed at least 303 people and injured more than 1,000, the deadliest day so far in the war that began on March 2nd. The scale of destruction is also being measured in infrastructure collapse. Reports cite strikes on roads, bridges, hospitals, and commercial districts, with aid delivery badly disrupted and parts of the south rendered non-functional. Like the Gaza genocide, this is not a limited border operation. It is a systematic campaign to make areas of Lebanon uninhabitable. The correspondence of interests between Washington and Tel Aviv were expressed when Trump said on Wednesday that he had spoken with Netanyahu and that Israel would, quote-unquote, tone it down in Lebanon. Knowing full well the Iranian position on the Lebanon, Trump added, quote, I think we need to be a bit more low-key, end quote, and claimed Netanyahu would, quote-unquote, ease up and be, quote-unquote, totally fine on the Lebanon issue. Meanwhile, Netanyahu's latest statements make clear that Israel's objective is not a pause, but a political military restructuring of Lebanon. He has said the talks with Lebanon will focus on, quote-unquote, disarming Hezbollah and establishing, quote-unquote, peaceful relations on Israeli terms, while also insisting that Israel will keep striking until its security conditions are met. These remarks should be understood alongside the fact that the bombing of Lebanon continues. Israel is using negotiations as a cover to press its military campaign, not as a genuine path to de-escalation. Israeli strikes continued Thursday, killing dozens more, with between 17 and 24 killed in specific strikes by Israel. This is, in fact, the same modus operandi of the Trump administration itself. The quote-unquote talks in Islamabad are but a respite as the White House considers its next move to militarily impose the requirements of U.S. imperialism onto the Iranian people. The WSWS has consistently maintained that this war is part of the imperialist effort by Washington to subordinate the region to American interests. The U.S. is pursuing, quote, the obliteration of Iran as a state and a campaign of terror against the population, end quote, and that the assault on Iran is tied to control over energy resources in preparation for a wider conflict, including against China and Russia. As an anonymous senior defense official told Politico in March, quote, Iran is not the end. It's the first test of a broader geopolitical reorientation. We are building the capacity to project power simultaneously in multiple theaters, Eurasia, the Pacific, and the Middle East, end quote. This analysis identifies the present war as a warning of what is coming next. The aim of U.S. imperialism is the domination of Iran as a major opening act in a broader global escalation. The Middle East war is the sharpest expression of the world crisis of capitalism. The ceasefire talks in Islamabad cannot resolve a conflict rooted in imperialist strategy, Israeli expansionism, and the drive of the U.S. ruling class to redivide the region by force. With these objectives intact, the present truce will be unstable, and the threat of a far broader war will continue to hang over the region and the world. For these articles and more, visit the World Socialist website at wsws.org. For the World Socialist website, this has been Jesse Thomas.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.